Our guest today is the founder of History Speaks Today. It's a project dedicated to sharing great lessons learned from accomplishments and failures from the past, helping us avoid making, you know, the same mistakes over and over again. What is it they say about insanity? Do we have insane policy? I wonder. He's the author of that project's first two books, Adamant Aggressors, How to Recognize and Deal with Them, and Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. He has a passion for history. He's been engaged in a number of businesses, and he's a guy that believes that, you know, you can have learned and applied knowledge from successes and failures, and you can take that knowledge and that understanding and properly handle rather than mishandle issues that affect national security, solidarity, social progress, immigration, other crucial areas. And this can be established not just in the United States, but throughout the world. Our guest is Bruce Thatcher. He joins us now. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Roger. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, sir. I just was reading through your bio and some of your, you know, interesting materials on your websites, and it's just pretty in-depth, you know, kind of a study of almost a, get a college education going through this stuff, man, on immigration. This is amazing stuff. You know, we are affected, and I'm, you know, the story about Homeland Security all week long has been about the cover-up of this supposed child molester that, you know, was apparently covered up until after the election, that worked for the congressman, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know how that really plays into the immigration subject, but it seems to me like there's a disconnect between the people on the ground conducting the work, like on the border, versus the administrators and policymakers in Washington. It seems like there's not a lot of continuity there right now, not a lot of love lost between any of the parties. Can you just describe for me how the border policy really is laid out and how it works in America?
Well, I'll try. The whole immigration issue flows from a complex set of band-aids and laws and regulations that have been passed over a period of years, and probably nobody understands it thoroughly, even if they do, except for immigration lawyers who have been spending their time and focus entirely on that subject. The borders are part of are under the responsibility of Homeland Security now, as they have been. All immigration matters have been since shortly after 9/11 and Homeland Security was formed. And these issues were moved from Justice Department into Homeland Security. The federal government is responsible for controlling the border. The federal government has been given that responsibility actually since the late 1800s through some Supreme Court decisions that said it's up to the feds, not to the states, to take care of such issues. And the federal government has laws that have been passed that says they are supposed to enforce the border. They have laws that have been passed that said they're supposed to build, in one instance, they're supposed to build fences. They have laws that have been passed that says they're supposed to use databases for tracking immigrants, illegal and legal. And for the most part, that's probably not fair. To a large extent, the federal government doesn't necessarily fully follow all those laws and directions. We have a law, for instance, that says, it was passed many years ago, that says they're supposed to use the integrated entry and exit database to keep track of people who overstay their visas. And they're supposed to then apprehend those people because they become illegal when they do that. Just this year, I noticed that the Department of Homeland Security has instituted a pilot program to test whether they can do that. The federal government theoretically is in charge of all these things, and if you listen to Janet Napolitano talk about how well they do, you get the impression that they've got the border closed down and there's hardly any problem. But if you listen to interviews with Border Patrol agents, you get quite a different picture. If you listen to people who live close to the border and from Texas to California, you get quite a different picture about how well the border is patrolled. It is true, as administration representatives say, we are getting a much lower level of illegal immigrants coming across the border than we used to. But that has to do, I maintain, with our economy. It does not have to do so much with how well we're controlling the border.
Well, I'll tell you my experience as a radio guy, and I used to conduct a much larger national show at night all across the country, and I had the opportunity to actually go down and spend time on the border with the Border Patrol. Got to ride with them at night up and down the Rio Grande there out of San Diego. I was part of a Light Up the Border movement back in the 90s during the Clinton years. And the people inside of the Border Control at the time were much more open, more willing to come out and talk and be public about what they were thinking. And I'm finding, as I've kind of, you know, redesigned my radio life to weekends and things, I'm finding it's very difficult under the Obama administration with Janet Napolitano in charge to get anybody to come out and talk. They're afraid to talk.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, but that's true. They know that their job, they know where their bread is buttered.
But they used to do it. They used to not care. They used to come out and just go on the air and say, you know, SOB to what it didn't see. Now, for some reason, under the Obama administration, it's like lips are sealed, clamp tight, and we ain't talking. What changed?
Well, I don't know, of course, specifically what changed, but one thing I can say could change is we have a new administration. We elected a different administration. And I've seen things that cause me to think that it's a very, very punitive and vindictive administration in many respects, in terms of the people it has running a lot of these things. But that's speculation. I don't know the answer to that, Roger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, look, it's just talk radio. It's okay to speculate. You know, that's what we do here. But my position is this. For some reason, the Homeland Security post-George Bush has become very tight-lipped. I don't know what the reason is. And it's very difficult to help inform people about what's going on because, as you know, I'm sure, there are a lot of really good, decent people inside the machine working. You know, real patriots who love their country.
Oh, and the ones that I encounter secondhand on radio and television interviews certainly convince me of that fact. There are Customs and Border Protection has over 60,000 employees. 21,000 of them are agents patrolling the borders. And I can't imagine that that anything more than a handful of those are anything other than extremely dedicated to their jobs. They want to do it, but what I hear from them is there's not enough of them to patrol a border. You hear about you have X agents for every X miles of the border in various places. They talk about in Arizona there are places where the signs say you should not be in this area, it's dangerous because of illegal drug activity coming across the border. They have a tough job, and they're not very much supported when they pick up a bunch of illegals. I'm not talking about drug smugglers, but just people coming into the country illegally, and the routine for handling them is to simply put them on a bus, take them back to the border, and turn them loose again. It doesn't give them. It's got to build in a lot of frustration.
Yeah, it's like moving piles of rocks.
Yeah, right.
You know, that was the torture at Leavenworth, right?
Yeah.
Move this pile of rocks over there. Are you done? Great. Now move it back.
Move it back. Yeah. You bet.
Yeah, and it is. It is a lesson in frustration. It truly is. It's got to be extremely difficult for the people on the ground. But then again, I guess my next question is, what else can you do?
Well, I think there's a number of things that you do, and it gets back to not first border control. It isn't building fences all along the border, in my opinion, because people who want to come here will get around fences. They'll come here some way or another. A huge number of them come by boat to this country. The fences won't keep them out if we keep attracting them in. And so we create the demand because we have jobs. We create the demand because they know that there is no particular penalty for coming here and getting caught. All they do is they get kicked out again, so they come back. I have a personal experience with that with here where I live in Texas, where the guy who built our house had working for him an illegal immigrant, not unusual, and the guy was a great employee.
Hold on one second. I've got to take a break. Hang on 1 minute. All right. You were talking about a contractor working on your home, I think, with a... Go ahead.
Yeah. And he had at least one undocumented immigrant working for him. Good worker, good man. Everything, you could be a friend with him. But he was deported twice. And each time he said, when I maybe said, gee, I'm sorry to see that you're going to be going, he would simply say, don't worry, I'll be back. And he was. A few months later, he was back. We need to realize when we talk about all the conversation about the border and controlling the border, more than half of all the illegal immigrants in this country came here legally. They came here as visitors or on some variety of temporary visas. And when the visa ran out, they just stayed.
Right.
They overstayed their visa. Those folks, once they're in because we don't enforce our laws. And everybody in the world knows we don't enforce our laws. So as long as we don't enforce our laws, there's no way we're going to keep illegal immigrants out of this country.
But it's such a hot political potato, Bruce. I mean, I watched this election, and it was just almost pathetic how they played the Latino vote. It was they orchestrated this magnificent, you know, symphony of political insanity to justify a lot of just ridiculous notions of taking the law and just completely flushing it down the toilet. I don't know how they get away with that stuff, but it seems like the folks who have oversight are so terrified they're going to upset the apple cart and chase off these blocks of voters that they just all kind of, you know, sing harmoniously to the tune of screw the law.
I think it's worse than being terrified. I don't think they're terrified at all. I think they are very, very down to earth in analyzing what they believe to be to their benefit and, excuse me, believing they don't have to enforce the laws. They simply will do, whatever they see as, in their benefit in the short term or the long term. So they issue executive orders, as Obama has done to ICE, and says that they're not going to detain, pick up, or deport any illegal aliens unless they've been convicted of a felonious crime. And that's documented. That's an order. You can see it on ICE's website. And they do this in part because they know it's politically in their interest. They do it in part because the people who are hiring these people, businesses complicit in this, people who are hiring these people want it done that way because they want to hire them. It's a whole collection of special interests who say we like the status quo the way it is.
You know what, and this has always bothered me, and by the way, I'm a guy who owned a business and I employed, I'll just be flat out honest, I employed illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
I found them to be much better workers than the Anglo-American boys. They were, instead of coming and bitching and complaining and demanding more and more and more all the time, they actually were appreciative of their job and worked their butts off and did a much better job. I'm just being honest.
Yep. Sure.
And we loved having them work for us. We did. They were there on time. They never complained. They didn't bitch if they had to work the weekend. And instead of cussing you on payday because you didn't pay them enough, they thanked you and were happy to get their checks. It's an incredibly different mindset. And so, I understand why business is open to these folks coming into the country. It's what was obvious to me as a businessman who was kind of forced into that. We got to take a break. Hang on just a minute. Bruce Thatcher is here on Homeland Security Radio. HistorySpeaksToday.com. If you want to learn more about him, check out the books. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Bruce. All right. Welcome back, Homeland Security Radio. Roger Fredenberg, your host. Joining us today is Bruce Thatcher from History Speaks Today. He's authored a couple of books you really need to look at. One is Adamant Aggressors, How to Recognize and Deal with Them, and Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. There's plenty at the website there. I think you'll enjoy it. Bruce, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we had this experience, and here was always my complaint. My friends and business associates would say to me, well, you know, you're one of those evil business people who invite this illegal immigration because you hire these immigrants, and if you wouldn't hire them, they'd stay home. And, you know, that was just so unfair because I got to be honest with you, the government provided way, way more incentives for these folks to come here than I ever could. I mean, no one rejects their children at the schoolhouse door. No one rejects these folks at the emergency room at the hospital. They create programs inside Health and Human Services for these folks. Who are they kidding?
They are, as soon as they get across the border, they are immediately eligible for virtually all of the social and welfare services that a natural born American citizen is eligible for. And that's been tested by law, cases taken to court by various agencies, and that's the way it is. I mean, there's the employment opportunity is part of it. People come here because they expect to have a better life here than somewhere else. So they come here. Part of the package that gives them a better life is, of course, all of the benefits they get, government benefits, by living in this country. I don't know which are the biggest pulls. My own experience has been like yours. When I run into and encounter immigrants, they're mostly hard-working people. They want to be here, and they want to make a good life for themselves and their families. But that good life is partly the employment, and yes, it is partly the services.
But my complaint, even though I mean, since we borrow most of the money anyway, it's all irrelevant to me now. What bothers me is that people will demonize a businessman for trying to stay in business by hiring undocumented aliens or illegal immigrants or whatever the buzzword is today, but they will not demonize government. I mean, why would you say jail the businessman for hiring illegal immigrants and not say jail the principal for letting them in the schoolhouse door?
You know, and that's an interesting point. And one of the laws that I would, down the list that I would propose be passed, is that government officials who fail to enforce immigration laws should be subject to penalties. In Singapore, that is the case, that is the law, and a government official who fails to enforce their immigration laws is subject to the same penalties that those illegal aliens are subject to when they get picked up. They don't have a problem there. But we exempt our government from any liabilities for such things. The Justice Department, Department of Homeland Security can choose to enforce what laws they want or not, and we don't hold them to task. We say, well, that's prioritizing. They have a right to do that. We don't hold their feet to the fire. And that's part of our problem.
Yeah, I mean, I've long been a proponent of ending sovereign immunity, as it's called in this country. I believe that politicians and government bureaucrats who cause harm to the society or to the country should be personally liable for the damage they cause. Up until 1946, that was the law of the land. Even for politicians, if they voted for stuff that was just plain old stupid, and they hurt their communities, those folks should hold those guys personally accountable, take them to court for damages, you know? And if you could sue for damages, I mean, it would change the dynamic between people and the government. And I think we should have that. Let me ask you this, though, because I know you want to respond, but I need to ask you this. Before the election, during the election, after the election, people like Marco Rubio, young senator from Florida, and others have clamored for this thing called the Dream Act, which the president tried to put in place by fiat, basically, with a presidential directive. Is it a good idea? Are they on the right track, or are they nuts?
Well, there's a lot within the Dream Act, I think, that has merit. There's no question about that. But stop and consider for a moment. The Dream Act and others that are proposed like it are put forth entirely from the point of view of attending to the needs and concerns of people who are not here legally. Now, through no fault of their own, in the case of the Dream Act, to be sure, in most cases, but nevertheless, we're talking about addressing the concerns of a class of illegal immigrants rather than the needs of the country. Nowhere in the Dream Act does it talk about how does this serve the needs of the country, except very peripherally. So keeping that in mind, yes, the Dream Act has merit, I think, or at least some of its provisions in terms of this 800,000 or so young people who, many of whom have always thought they were Americans because nobody told them different until they got a little bit older. We need to do something about it. But President Obama himself took away all the urgency for that when he exercised his parole right and said, all of these people are immune from deportation. They are not, and all of these people can get work permits so that they can work. And the only thing not included in his executive order, because he doesn't have a legal right to do it, is to grant them a path to citizenship. That can be taken care of in a more intelligent way as a part of comprehensive immigration reform. Now, Marco Rubio talks about wanting comprehensive immigration reform. Everybody who talks about immigration reform now, since the election's over, says, therefore, comprehensive immigration reform. But I haven't heard anybody talk about that where comprehensive means anything other than let's close the border or enforce the fences or whatever, and let's take care of the illegal immigrants who are in the country and give them amnesty. Those two issues do not make up comprehensive immigration reform. So the problem with the Dream Act and all of the things that have been proposed that I've seen so far is that they don't address the real issues, and they're going to sap all of our interest in immigration reform if we pass a couple of those things, and then our politicians are going to say, well, now we've taken care of it, and that won't be the case.
Right. And don't the states, I mean, watching what's happening with Arizona, for example, don't they have real issues when it comes to some of the expense, whether it's incarcerating the criminal element of illegal immigration, or whether it's dealing with some of these less, memorable and desirable things like driver's license or job permits or work permits. I mean, they've got to deal with a lot of heartache along the border that people don't think about in states that aren't on the border. It just seems to me like then you add that drug trade back and forth with these cartels. It doesn't seem to me like if we're going to have the federal government in charge of the borders, we got to do more, right?
I think we have to do more. I think the federal government is in charge of the borders, then the federal government has a responsibility to literally control them. And we've already talked about individual border agents and the boots on the ground kind of thing and those people, but there's not enough of them. We spend the budget for border control, Customs and Border Protection is about $12 billion per year. In a government that's spending $2 trillion more than they're authorized to spend practically every year, another 11 or 20 or $20 billion would hardly seem to be a drop in the bucket, and yet it could probably make a big difference. The federal government has a great penchant for passing laws and taking actions and then leaving the consequences up to the individual states to deal with. We see it in Medicaid. We see it in all kinds of mandates that the government puts on the states to take care of things. Yeah, I think the states have a big concern because they're the ones, particularly the ones along the border, are the ones who bear the brunt of the costs of this mismanagement at best that the federal government applies to our immigration.
Right. Well, I was in California, and I had worked on the campaign for Pete Wilson for governor. Pete was the governor there in California and tried to sue the federal government to get repayment or compensated for the extra expense of incarcerating these folks that come here and commit crimes. And he was basically slapped down.
He was. Of course, the federal government has to agree to be sued. You're back to sovereign immunity. They passed proposition in California, and it began, if I remember correctly, with Pete Wilson, and said they don't want to. It had to do with providing services to illegal immigrants, and that was immediately challenged in the court, as it was for similar or related propositions in every state that passed one, right up to the current day. And Governor Gray Davis finally just let it die rather than take it to court, rather than fight it. It becomes politically very hazardous to take a tough stance on immigration. We have the impetus for our immigration now, the major impetus is family related. Over somewhere around 2/3 of all immigrants, and we're talking about, we're up to about 1.2 million a year now, come in under terms of, they come in because they are relatives of people already in the country.
All right, hold it right there while we take the break. Bruce Thatcher is here, folks. You can check out his website, historyspeakstoday.com. I think you'll find it very interesting. Don't go away. Stay tuned. There's a little more, just a little more right after this. All right, welcome back to Homeland Security Radio. Roger Fredenberg, your host here with Bruce Thatcher today, founder of History Speaks Today. Bruce, we've got a few minutes left, and I thought maybe you'd just take some time and outline, from your perspective, with your experience on this topic of immigration, the borders and such, what can we do, if anything, to appease the masses in this country and resolve this issue?
I think that the best way to approach that is to initiate a big public discussion, and probably that would best happen if with something like a joint House and Senate committee on immigration holding hearings and publicly discussing the issues, all of the issues about immigration, starting out with the question of what should be the objective of our immigration policy, what national interest should we be supporting. If we could define that, a lot of the other pieces would probably fall into place. That would be the toughest nut to crack. I think that we need to talk about, should we really be having over half a million, almost 600,000 immigrants come into this country with no other, unlimited by any numbers or quotas or anything, but simply because they're close relatives of people who are already here. Should we have two-thirds of all immigrants be in the family category and only 17% in the economic category, which, by the way, includes a religious preference for clerics, and in that category includes Islamic clerics, even if they are Salafis or Wahhabis, which presumably are the kinds we wouldn't like to have in this country because they don't like us. We need to have the Congress step up to it and say, okay, let's address all of these things from the top down and abolish preferences if necessary, at least discuss it, discuss whether we're immigrants ought to be, all of them ought to be literate, and whether they ought to already be English literate before they can be an immigrant to the country. If we go through those kinds of things, and there's a number of them, yes, enforcement of the laws will be part of it. Yes, resolving the status of the undocumented aliens will be part of it, but they'll be part of it in context. And I think we have a much better chance of having the country, getting the country together on what our policy should be and what the provisions of it should be if the Congress would open that discussion.
Well, what I see is that there's this consideration by Americans that they would want to break up families and order folks back across the borders. And we always seem to focus on Mexico, but the reality is the laws apply to immigrants from all over the world.
While they
turn it into a race baiting game, it's really more than that.
It is, and only about half of the illegal immigrants are Mexican. That means about half of them come from other places.
Right, I understand, but there's a lot of emphasis placed on Mexican immigrants. I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it's been perpetrated against us by the political beings out there that need some kind of racial argument for these elections. I don't know, but it's not. For me, it's not about race. It's really about law and order. If you have a law, you should uphold the law. You should stand by it. We're a nation of laws.
And if
you don't like the law, then you change the dadgum law.
That's right.
I got no problem with you changing the law, but if you change the law into a law that you're not going to enforce, as you suggested earlier, what's the point of any law? Do we get to pick and choose the laws that we enforce in America now? Is that the country we've become?
Well, I listen to the public dialogue, and I think that's the kind of country that a lot of people would like to have. They would like to enforce the laws that they want enforced, but they would like to have the laws they don't like not enforced. They don't focus on, as you raised, the point you made is if you don't like the law, then there are mechanisms for changing it.
Yeah. Listen, we're out of time. We're out of time, Bruce. I hope you'll come back sometime. Bruce Thatcher, founder of History Speaks Today. Bruce, thank you very much. Bless you and your family in this holiday season, and have a Merry Christmas, each and one of everyone. I don't know what we're going to do for the holidays. I'm going to try to be here. See you all later. God bless, and stay tuned.